We are now well and truly accustomed to understanding that November is what we call the month of holy souls, the month when we pray for our departed family and friends, those who have returned to the Father. And so our memorial board over here is always here in November, remembering the people from our parish and our families here whom we have buried in the last 12 months. So November is really about the end things, the last things, or the end times. This concludes, the week after next, concludes the church's year. It's the end of the church's year. The church's new year begins on the first Sunday of Advent. And we will be going into the Gospel of Matthew. We leave Luke in 2 weeks and we go into the Gospel of Matthew for the next year. So end things are the basic theme that we centre on at this time. And as Jennifer read at the beginning, we honour in this Mass particularly not just the Catenian family, which we do annually, but also those who have died defending freedom, those in uniform who have given their lives. I do that because I attach it to Remembrance Day on Friday. Even the first reading from the prophet Malachi is the last book of the Bible. It's not the last book of the Catholic Bible. The Catholic Bible has what we call the apocryphal writings in it and the Deuterocanonicals. Big word. But the apocryphal writings are not included in most Protestant Bibles. So the end of the Old Testament is with Malachi. And he is the last of the 12 minor prophets. The big fellows like Isaiah and Elijah and the others are, they are what we call the major prophets. And Malachi, the end of the 12 minor prophets. We then come forward to the Gospel. I will come back to the second reading. We come forward to the Gospel, and certainly if you listen to that Gospel, it could well be a news article that you have just read this morning in a newspaper or something that you've watched on the news on television. Nation will fight against nation. And kingdoms against kingdoms. There will be famines and disasters. And these things, we are told, must happen. But the end, and this is the cruncher that has been put in by Luke, the end is not so soon. So whilst Luke has Jesus giving forward these words about the end, and Malachi is the last of the minor prophets, and I'm saying November, we contemplate on the end times, what's going to happen to us when we die. We contemplate what is heaven, what is hell, what's in between, where am I going to end up? What if this happens to me? And it's as though what we contemplate now in the seeming gloominess of the world around us, it's exactly the same as what was happening in Jesus' time. Those questions were asked by those people. But can I just draw your attention to a very important fact? Luke's gospel was written about 80-85 AD. And you would read Luke's gospel in conjunction with the Acts of the Apostles in Holy Scripture, because he wrote both of them. So it's volume 1 and volume 2, if you like. You read them together. And we get in there, from Luke and the Acts of the Apostles, the account of the early church. Now, if Luke's gospel was written 80-85 years later, then the events that he's recorded here make Jesus seem not like some prophet as such, although there's certainly an element of that, but it makes it seem as though Jesus has got a crystal ball and these things are going to happen. But by the time Luke wrote his gospel, these things had already happened. So his audience, Luke's audience, and now you, they are people who have lived through and experienced the very things that Jesus said would happen. So Luke has remembered Jesus' conversations, or people that were with Jesus had passed that on. And what was not so much prophesied, but what he said would happen did. Just let me remind you of a couple of things. And I emphasise this because the people of that time, the early church, and it's, we mentioned specifically those from Thessaloniki, the second reading today, they thought initially that Jesus would return immediately, but he didn't, and they were waiting and waiting. And the Thessalonians, they had a mindset where, well, what's the point in doing any work? What's the point in burrowing down now? Because the end is going to come anyway. Jesus said he would return, and I kind of believe you, Paul. That's what he said was going to happen. So let's not get too fussed about things at the moment. They became lazy and complacent. And so St. Paul is reminding the Thessalonians, in this waiting time, keep working, keep focused and persevere. So in this waiting time for Jesus' second coming, which is the end time, we have to contemplate, well, what were these people experiencing? They were experiencing everything Jesus said would happen that Luke had written down much after all of these events. And let's just remember what they were. Firstly, in 60 AD, Jerusalem was destroyed. The temple, the heart of Judaism, was ripped away. And to this day, it has never been completely rebuilt. The temple has never been rebuilt. The only remaining parts of the temple, the heart of Judaism in Jerusalem, is the foundation stones of what we would call the Western Wall. Some Christians call it the Wailing Wall. That's all that's left from when Titus levelled Jerusalem in 60 AD. Now, we could not really imagine that. Some of us would have drawn a breath when we saw Notre Dame burn in Paris a couple of Easters ago and how horrible that was. But that was not the heart of Catholicism in the world or indeed in France. It was, in a sense, the heart of Catholicism in Paris, but Paris has many other beautiful, beautiful cathedrals and churches. And so there was more. Judaism had the temple and it was gone. It was the heart of their world, their religious world. So that will have been in their mind, the audience, who were predominantly Jews who had become Christians, and a big amount would have been those that were not Jewish that had become Christian. They would have known these things. This news article that Jesus is, in a sense, reading, they were well aware of because it had already happened. They lived through the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. 9 years, I'm sorry, that was 70 AD. I may have said 60 AD. In 70 AD, that was when the temple was destroyed. 9 years after that, in 79, Mount Vesuvius blew up, destroying Pompeii and Herculaneum. Now, we might think, yes, we all know about that. The impact of that volcanic explosion was massive. Now, remember that the Romans are occupying Palestine and Israel. And the Jews and the Romans together were already persecuting the early church. Word for word, what was in that gospel. They were already persecuting the Christians. And then the temple is destroyed. And then Vesuvius erupts over the Roman Empire. I might be exaggerating a tad there, but the impact of Vesuvius would have been enormous, and it would have been seen by people that didn't have our scientific knowledge certainly as some kind of warning from heaven, the signs that are worded in today's gospel. It will have really adjusted people's thinking. So Luke, when he writes, he is aware of all of these things. He's aware of the pain that some people in his audience will have experienced when they watched Jesus die, and then the mystery of his resurrection and ascension. There were some people around who still would have got that. They would have not just passed it on, it would have been burnt in their mind. There were some people around who remembered the temple being destroyed, burnt into their heart. And there were those that was still living with the impact, very much so in Luke's time, with Vesuvius. So the world around it, as we know it, seems like Well, that's what's happening pretty much today in different shapes and different flavours. So what's changed? Well, Paul gives us the solution in the second reading there. What has changed is that these things will happen. But the end, as Jesus says, is not so soon. And in the meantime, don't sit back. Don't become a Thessalonian. Don't become complacent. The tool, he says, is to keep working. And by working, he means it's part of creation. It is part of God's creation, and it is part of us becoming a community, working together. That's how we persevere in our faith. And that's what he's encouraging the Thessalonians to do, and that's what Luke is encouraging his audience to do, and therefore us to do, is persevere by keeping our head down and focused on what is truly important. These other things will go on around us. So we strive to build up a better community of people who genuinely care and love each other, who look after each other when these things happen. And time will reveal in God's good time what he wants to reveal to us. But in the meantime, he has revealed to us how to be happy. And how to be happy is to be a companion with Jesus. Let him be a companion with us. It was even Sigmund Freud who said, believe it or not, I'm not a fan of all of Freud's writings, but it was Freud who said that the key to happiness is love and work. Now, love, Freud actually means having good relationships, healthy relationships, right relationships. But go back before Freud, it was Saint Benedict who said that the key to harmony is actually prayer and work. You cannot escape it. That's my words, not Benedict's. You can't escape that work is an integral part of keeping us focused, of helping us persevere. It leads to our ultimate happiness, which is what we would be thinking of when we think of at the end of our life, is it heaven or is it hell? Try to remove the images that we have of understanding what heaven is and look at it in terms of relationship. And we work towards that pure relationship. C.K. Chesterton said early in the 1900s, he said that earth is the task garden. So this is the place where we work. Earth is the task garden, and heaven is the playground. I quite like that. We work now here, we put up with everything here now, but heaven will be the playground. So if we take work away, and how important that is for building up society and our relationships, we take that away, then we're left with basically nothing, and nothing is despair. And that would be a terrible place to be. But we have hope. I suppose that's why our grandparents had that wonderful saying when it came to the playground, as it were. When we try to keep ourselves busy, idle hands are the devil's playground. Some of you may have heard that before, some of you may not. Idle hands are the devil's playground. Keep ourselves busy, keep ourselves focused in our work on building up the community, building up God's kingdom here on earth. Do it with dignity and do it with respect. Don't focus too much on whether you think there are angels flapping around in heaven, and don't worry about things like little red men with horns and forks poking marshmallows. Don't worry about those things. I think it was certainly Johnny Cash who said, "How well have I learned that there is no fence to sit on between heaven and hell." Johnny Cash. I wrote it down because I didn't want to get it wrong. "How well have I learned that there is no fence to sit on between heaven and hell." Keep working hard, keep persevering, keep the faith, keep the focus. That's all we're asked to do. And remember, idle hands are the devil's playground.